I'm Tom Hall. This is an archive edition of Midday. In 2002, the Maryland General Assembly adopted recommendations from a commission headed by Dr. Alvin Thornton to invest an additional $1.3 billion to improve Maryland schools. In 2015, Maryland fourth graders ranked 29th in math and 26th in reading. Eighth graders did even worse. In 2016, the legislature formed another commission, this one chaired by Dr. Britt Kerwin, to recommend a new formula for funding schools and to suggest ways to right the ship of declining academic performance. Today, a rebroadcast of my conversation from earlier this month with Britt Kerwin, the chair of that commission. We can't take your calls and emails today. Britt Kerwin joins me when Midday starts right after the news. Good afternoon and welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. Today, my guest is Britt Kerwin. He's the chair of the Commission on Innovation and Excellence, known as the Kerwin Commission. For the last 2 years, the commission has been studying the public pre-K through 12 education system in our state, and it's planning to release a series of recommendations as to how the state should reorder its educational priorities, improve accountability, and fund our schools. Dr. Kerwin was the president of the University of Maryland when he served on the faculty for 34 years, and the chancellor of the University System of Maryland from 2002 to 2015. Prior to that, for 4 years, he served as the president of Ohio State University. We're streaming this conversation on the WIPR Facebook page. We'll begin taking your calls and comments a little later in the program. Britt Kerwin, it's good to see you again, sir.
Well, thank you. It's great to be with you.
So, back in the day, in the 80s, even in the early 90s, Maryland ranked near the top of the heap when it came to education nationwide.
Right.
It's no longer anywhere near the top.
Right.
And by some indices, it's pretty near the bottom.
Right.
What happened, number one? And number two, what is the capacity of the Kerwin Commission in the move to improve things? I mean,
right.
How do you fit into the puzzle of all the pieces that have to come together to make it better?
Right, right. Well, that's of course, an excellent question. You know, I think the rankings that have placed Maryland at the top of the heap, and some still do to this day, have largely been based on what I would call input measures. How many advanced placement courses do you offer? How many students take advanced placement courses? Da-da-da-da-da. Funding levels and things like that. And when you look at those kinds of measures, there's a lot of good things in Maryland. But some years ago, the federal government mandated that a test, the National Assessment of Education Progress, be given to every 4th, 8th, and 12th grader in the country to actually measure what are students learning. And
So that metric's 4 years old.
Yes. And it's, I think, maybe even goes back further than that. But in any case, it's a way of assessing what are Maryland students, how are they doing in relation to students in other states. And, you know, one of the things the commission learned is we're not doing very well.
No.
In a recent NAEP exam, we ranked, I just wrote it down here, the 29th in fourth grade math, 26th in fourth grade reading, 25th in eighth grade math.
As I understand it, Maryland is the only state in the country where fourth and eighth grader eighth grade test scores dropped
right.
in reading and math
right.
from year to year.
Right.
This really is heading south.
It is. And you know, part of the commission's challenge, quite frankly, has been there is a certain complacency in Maryland. There's this sort of perception built on these earlier rankings that Maryland schools are really very good. And quite frankly, we've learned that they're not. And that's of great concern. Now, I give Governor Hogan and the legislature a lot of credit for appointing this commission, because they recognize that Maryland's future and the future well-being of our citizens and our children depend upon a high quality of education. That's the nature of the economy in this day and age. So they gave a very daunting charge to the commission when it was formed. They first of all wanted us to look at the Thornton formula and see if it needed to be updated. But the more challenging charge was to make recommendations so that Maryland schools would perform at the level of the best performing systems in the world, not just the United States, in the world. And, you know, that's very visionary.
And folks have called this a once in a generation opportunity because Thornton is 15 years old, right?
Right.
2002 is when they formed that commission. So, I mean, given the mandate, I mean, do you agree that this is like we have one shot at this for the next 15 years?
Right. You know,
and what's different then? What's different? Why has Thornton has not succeeded? So what can we do differently that to make this one succeed?
Well, I think at the time, the Thornton Commission was pretty forward-looking. They created a funding formula with weights for special categories of students. And I think across the country, people thought that this was a pretty astute way of looking at funding education. But when I talked to people that were involved in the Thornton Commission and asked, why didn't we get the results that we all hoped to have? I hear two things. First of all, there was no overarching construct for what K through 12 should be, the strategies, the goals for the entire state, number one. Number two, there was inadequate accountability. And that's what we're trying to address with the work of this commission.
Would a number three also be that people didn't stick to the plan? I mean, because the Thornton funding had there was a formula for funding called the Thornton formula.
Right.
And there are those who would argue that particularly during years where there was a recession, 2008, 2009, 2010, that we abandoned it.
Right. Well, actually, what happened during the recession, the formula was supposed to be upgraded with inflationary dollars each year. When the economy went south, the General Assembly and the governor at the time decided we can't afford to put the money in for inflation. But the formula was not abandoned. But basically, what happened with the Thornton Commission is that each local education authority, each district, was supposed to submit a plan of how they were going to use the new money. And these plans—
Which, again, is about $1.3 billion.
Yeah, new money.
And that was considered new money.
Right. And so these plans were basically rubber-stamped. And then they got the money, and nobody went back to check to see if they were using the money to meet the to fulfill what they had proposed doing. So I think we've learned a lot from the Thornton Commission, and I think that gives us the potential for our report to be even more impactful.
And of course, you know, as you're saying, accountability is a very important parameter of this.
Right.
Accountability is certainly very high on the governor's mind. Every time he talks about education funding, in the next sentence, it's about how people are not accountable.
Right.
I mean, he has scolded the city school system, the Prince George's County school system, the Baltimore County school system. I mean, he's got things to say about accountability. He's even suggested, forming a new office to, to investigate. What's going on, the nefarious activity that he seems to think is happening.
Yeah. So we live in an era of accountability. There is an expectation. I mean, people don't want to see dollars invested without some assurance that results are there's going to be an ROI, a return on investment. So, you know, and I've all my life, I've been a big believer in accountability. So that is going to be an important aspect of our report.
And some people are worried, frankly, about the accountability of the commission.
Uh-huh.
Because the first report, we understood initially that it was formed in 2016. And by the end of 2017, prior to the legislative session in this past legislative session in January of 2018, the legislature would have a report to work with. They'd have something to talk about.
Yeah.
That was delayed. Didn't happen during the session.
Yeah.
Didn't happen before the June 26th primary. When's it going to happen?
It was going to
happen. And why was it delayed?
Yeah. Okay. So we didn't start meeting until the fall of 2016. And then when 2017 comes, we were we couldn't work for 3 months because the legislature was in session. We had eight members of the commission or members of the General Assembly.
Who are on the commission.
They're on the commission. The staff is the department, comes from DLS, the Department of Legislative Services, so we didn't have any staff. So there's a three-month hiatus. And then we get back to work. And, I don't think anybody fully appreciated the magnitude of this challenge. We are being asked to invent and develop a funding formula for an entire new system of education that will be at the level of the best performing education systems in the world. So we're supposed to do this in 6 months?
Right. But you see this as not a tweak of the current thing.
Absolutely.
This is a rebuild. This is a demo and start from scratch.
Yeah, yeah. So if I could, let me tell you how we've gone about our work. Mm-hmm. Would that be
please?
So I think your listeners would appreciate this. So we've got this charge to make recommendations to create a system, not tweak the existing system. Create a system that'll perform at the level of the best performing systems in the world. And we've already heard that Maryland is very mediocre, middle of the pack in the U.S. in terms of its performance. But here's another thing. When you look at how the U.S. performs internationally, there's an exam called the PISA exam, which is given in advanced economies to representative samples of 15-year-olds. Here's where the U.S. ranks in these international in reading, we're 23rd. In math, we're 39th in the world. In science, we're 25th. So the harsh reality that the commission is faced with, that Maryland performs at a mediocre level in a country that performs at a mediocre level, and we're supposed to make recommendations so they will perform at the level of the best performing systems in the world. Now, that's a challenge.
Yeah.
So, okay, here's how we went about our work. We were blessed to discover that there is this very highly regarded think tank in Washington, D.C., called the National Center for Education and the Economy. They have spent the past 25 years studying what makes high-performing systems around the world. Now, they're all, they're located in different economies, different governmental structures, et cetera, but what are the common elements of the really high-performing systems? And out of that research over 25 years, they developed what they call the 9 building blocks of high-performing systems. So what we did is we did a gap analysis. We looked at 7 systems. We looked at 4 international, Finland, Ontario, Shanghai, and Singapore, and 3 in the U.S., New Jersey, New Hampshire, and Massachusetts. And we did a gap analysis. What are these systems doing, and what is Maryland doing against these 9 building blocks? So out of that, we developed 5 major policy initiatives that shape our report. And I think it'd be
I can just quickly run those down. One is early childhood education. One is elevating the profession of teaching itself. Another is better college and career preparation.
Right.
Another is more resources devoted to at-risk students.
Right.
And then, as you say, governance and accountability.
Exactly.
So, and were those just unaddressed in Thornton? Or are those things that no one's thought to worry about in previous iterations?
Well, I mean, we do have some early childhood education programs. People have been worried about the curriculum, et cetera. We're now talking a lot about career and technical education, but this hasn't been done in a systematic way across the state. That's what this report is aimed at doing, building a systematic means of implementing strategies in these 4 basic policy, 5 basic policy areas. And, that's what I think will make a difference for our state.
In October of 2017, there was a meeting of the Maryland Board of Education Associations, and there were some members of the Curwen Commission that complained at that meeting. So this is 10 months ago, that, as you mentioned, one of the first sort of primary mandates for the commission was to come up with a new formula for funding schools.
Right.
Almost everybody agrees that the way we're allocating money to various jurisdictions is not working.
Right.
It's flawed, it's not fair, and it's clearly not efficient and successful. But a few of those folks on the commission complained at that meeting that at that juncture, 10 months ago, the commission hadn't even taken up the idea of the formula for funding.
For a very good reason.
And is this cart before the horse stuff?
Absolutely. Look, you can't decide how much money and how you're going to spend the money until you know what it is you're going to do. So we first had to develop our policy recommendations, and which we did, and we issued a preliminary report in January, which quite frankly was very well received by the General Assembly and the governor, so much so that they passed a bill, which the governor was pleased to sign, to jumpstart the recommendations. Now that we have determined the essential policy elements that we need to follow, we are hard at work developing the costing out of these various initiatives and policies. And you couldn't have done it any other way. You couldn't do the funding before you knew what you were going to spend it on.
All right. When we come back, we're going to talk about what we might spend it on.
Okay,
and how
good.
Much it's going to cost.
Yes.
And listeners, get ready. Hold on to your wallets. It ain't cheap. Dr. Britt Kerwin is the chair of Maryland's Commission on Innovation and Excellence in Education. It's known as the Kerwin Commission. After a quick break, we will continue our conversation about the future of public education here in our state. We'll take your calls and comments. Our number here at midday, 410-662-8780. To send us an email, midday@wypr.org. To send us a tweet, @midday WYPR. You can also catch us on the WYPR Facebook page where we are streaming our conversation. Before we take a break, some news from one of the state's leading arts institutions. Baltimore Center Stage announced this morning that they have hired a new artistic director, Stephanie Ibarra. Will join Center Stage full-time in December. She comes to Baltimore from New York, where she has spent the last 6 years at the Public Theater. She's a native of Texas. She's worked there. She's worked in Boston, in New Haven, Connecticut, and at several other theaters in New York. Stephanie Ibarra succeeds Kwamikwe Arma, who held the reins at Baltimore Center Stage for 7 years. We look forward to having Miss Ibarra here on Midday just as soon as we can. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow, it's the Midday News Wrap. My friend and colleague Nathan Sterner will be sitting in for me. He's going to look behind some of the big headlines of the week with Reverend Gregory Seal Livingston. He's a pastor from Chicago, which has seen a terrible spate of violence this month. And Melody Simmons from the Baltimore Business Journal. She'll have a preview of a series that begins tomorrow in the BBJ called Stop Apologizing Baltimore, in which the staff of the paper talk to citizens and business and political leaders about all the positive things that are going on around town as we try to work ourselves out of the problems that came into sharp relief following the riots and uprising in 2015. So I hope you will join Nathan for those conversations tomorrow on Midday. If you're just joining us today, we're talking about the work of Maryland's Commission on Innovation and Excellence in Education, known as the Kerwin Commission, with its chair, Dr. Britt Kerwin. The commission was formed 2 years ago to make recommendations as to how Maryland can improve our public education system. Dr. Kerwin is Chancellor Emeritus of the University System of Maryland. He was a longtime faculty member and later president of the University of Maryland College Park. You are welcome to join our conversation at 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org, to drop us a tweet @midday WYPR, to drop me a tweet and join me on Twitter @TomHallWYPR. You can also catch us on the WYPR Facebook page. So Dr. Kerwin, Josh Michael sends us a tweet. It's important to note that the NAEP, that's part of this test for the national assessment, is not taken by all students, but instead a representative sample from across the country.
I appreciate his making that correction. Thank you very much for that.
You mentioned this, the foreign countries as well as the states here in America that you look to as paradigms. In particular, Massachusetts is held up as a state that somehow done it right. They introduced a bunch of reforms in the early 1990s. they succeeded and we didn't. So what's the difference? What can we learn from Massachusetts? Right. Well, or is that too simplistic an assessment?
No. I think it's actually a good model for us, because what Massachusetts did is they did a deep study of what they would need to do to elevate the performance of their schools. And they came up, they didn't have the 9 building blocks that we've been working with, but they came up with a lot of those initiatives on their own. Some of the things that we're recommending doing, they did. For example, raising the criteria, the certification standard for teachers, paying teachers at a better salary to attract a better caliber of teachers. And they made this series of recommendations, and they had an implementation plan over a 10-year period, and they stuck with it. Governors came and went, legislators came and went, but they stuck with this plan. And what results they got. I mentioned the PISA exam, this international exam. Now, it turns out if you are a state, you can oversample and be considered a country.
How does that work?
Well, so right now, what
the breakaway Republic of Rhode Island? What's that on?
Well, the PISA has a representative samples of each country of students. And so you can add students through their formula so you can be considered a country, just to see how you would compare on an international level. And Massachusetts would rank number 5 in the world.
In the world.
Now, think about Massachusetts. Think about Maryland. Both start with an M. Both here in the Northeast. Both roughly the same size. Both have strong labor union traditions, et cetera, et cetera. And I keep telling everybody, by golly, if Massachusetts can do it, so can Maryland.
And both states have a very high median income.
Yes,
some point in time,
exactly.
And maybe even right this moment, I don't know.
Right.
Maryland may be the number one state for median income in the country.
It is.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, people have long said that one of the great indicators of educational success is money.
Right.
Right? And people say, you know, that's the difference between Howard County and Baltimore City. They've got better results in Howard County because the median income is so much higher.
But
does that apply statewide? Is that true, and does it apply statewide?
It's not just how much you spend, it's what you spend it on. And that's what is really part and parcel of the recommendations we're making.
So let's talk about some of those recommendations.
Absolutely.
The first is this pre-K situation.
Right.
So even before kids get to kindergarten, early childhood education, everybody who runs for office, they all come in, they sit in the same seat you're sitting in, and they tell me, oh, I support pre-K. Turns out the city of Baltimore, as I understand, is really the only one in the state that has an all-day pre-K program.
I don't know if they're the only one, but they do have it, and they're not that many that do. But what the commission is recommending is that there be full day pre-K for all low-income 3-year-olds free, and all low-income 4-year-olds. That this be universal across the state. Now, why are we saying that? There is no question that that poverty has a dramatic impact on young people's readiness for school. I saw a statistic the other day I can hardly believe, that a kid in an affluent family is exposed to 30 million more words than a kid growing up in poverty by the time they enter the fifth grade. Now, that's a gap.
And not exposed to a whole lot of other stuff.
Exactly. And that's a gap that's an enormous gap to make up.
One estimate, and it came in, I have no idea whether it's to be believed or not, says that just the pre-K part of this could cost $1 billion.
No.
New York City pays $50 million a year, as I understand it, and they're educating every 3-year-old in all 5 boroughs.
Right.
So, and by the way, the New York City crime rate, the murder rate per 100,000 people in New York, is 18 times less than it
is in Baltimore. Right.
So I mean, there's more than just an education argument for pre-K funding, is
right.
there?
Well, it's also, I mean, it's helpful to, particularly for low-income families where the guardian or parent needs to work. So, you know, there's the kids are in pre-K, not only learning, but giving them the time to go out. But, you know, this early childhood, it goes beyond pre-K in the third grade. Although it's outside of our purview, we're also recommending that the state invest more in these family resource centers and the Judy centers that are targeted at helping low-income families, young mothers, learn about nutrition, how to take care of their kids, because 0 to 3 is also very important. But in any case, this preschool is a universally for low-income kids, 3 and 4 year olds across the state, big initiative. And, you know, I think there's general consensus that this is the right way for us to go.
So Carly has pinged us on Facebook, says, if the accountability is based on standardized test scores, the formula is destined to fail. If it does not account for products of poverty, addiction, and mental illness, it will not meet the needs of students. So is there a conversation about gauging the funding formula so that there is some consideration for people who are dealing with challenges that people in more affluent jurisdictions just
absolutely
don't deal with?
Absolutely. So, her point is very well taken. And, you know, to make the accountability on a simplistic measure of how kids score on a standardized test would be a big mistake. And so that's not where we're headed.
So it's going to be more than just that.
Much more sophisticated and sensitive to all sorts of factors.
Here's Danny on Facebook says, if primary public and private schools use cable educational channels to offer educational content directly into the home, many cable customers will buy the service to augment both their children's education and to better understand how to help their children. I mean, there are high schools now where you can take the math class on the computer in your living room.
Right.
Is that part of your conversation?
Well, no, it has not been.
So we're not going to put the classroom on cable television.
No, we're not going to put the class. Although I must say, I am a big believer that technology is going to, generally speaking, help us elevate the education level of our citizenry. But that's not one of our recommendations.
All right. Before we talk about some of the other areas of interest, let's try to get a couple of phone calls in here. James in Baltimore, welcome to Midday with Dr. Britt Kerwin.
Good afternoon, Tom and Dr. Kerwin. I'm an education advocate, and I put 3 children through Baltimore City school system as a single dad. And we fought to get the Thornton Commission, Senate Bill 795, approved. And over time, one of the things that I've looked at and analyzed and find fault with is, first, the first thing that has to happen is it has to be a total buy-in from parents, community, and the school systems that it affects. But according to what has happened with the previous commission, oversight of how money is spent never happened, number one. Implementation of the commission's recommendation in totality, oversight never happened by MSDE. So implementation of a commission report, oversight of how the funding is going to be spent has to be paramount. If you don't see how the money is spent, whatever amount you spend, if you don't scrutinize how it's spent and how the curriculums are implemented, then it's all for naught.
Yeah, that's a good point, James. I appreciate it. And this is, you're talking about accountability.
Absolutely. I thank the caller, James, for that comment. I couldn't agree with him more.
So what are the new parameters,
right,
of accountability,
right,
that heretofore haven't existed?
Accountability is something that we are continuing to work on. We believe we don't have the full accountability mechanism in place, but when we issue our report, it will be. But some of the basic operating assumptions are, first of all, that a substantial part of any new money has to be conditioned on some higher authority assessing that the local districts have implemented faithfully the recommendations of the commission and that they are making progress towards the goal of the state.
Isn't who the someone is really important?
And that's what we're working on exactly right now. So this has to be a high-level group, highly respected, that will make an independent assessment that the recommendations have been implemented, they're at work, and they're making progress. And
so this probably doesn't fall to some legislative committee.
No,
so you're talking about a commission of independent people appointed
exactly
by the governor and
approved
the leadership.
By the General Assembly. I think most people who have looked at the Thornton Commission, and even privately Alvin Thornton has told me this, that he thinks that's where Thornton Commission, that was why it did not produce the results everybody was hoping for, that there wasn't a rigorous assessment of the implementations, just as James was saying.
You talk about Massachusetts,
right,
and you talk about one of the things that accounts for their success is that they stuck with it.
Right.
I've heard a bunch of people tell me, on and off the record, that we just didn't stick with Thornton. We have a listener, Melissa, who sends us a tweet. Part of what failed us with Thornton was the failure to fully fund and no legislative mandate to fully fund it. I've had people right. in the legislature tell me that. I've had education experts right. tell me that. So what, I mean, because this price tag, whatever it is, and I know you haven't come up with the final
right.
bill,
right.
but it's going to be huge.
Right.
So, I mean, can this be, can your recommendations be couched in the requirement that whatever it costs, we got to pay it?
Right.
Is that how it's going to be approached?
Well, that will certainly be our recommendation, and we are also talking about these are major changes. They're not going to happen overnight. So this is going to be a 10-year or so phase in. Some of the initiatives, early childhood education, greater investment in schools serving high concentrations of poverty, they can happen right away. But the reforms we're talking about in teaching as a profession, that's going to take some time to phase in. So this is going to be a 10-year program, and the test is going to be, does Maryland have the will to stick with it? I mean, there's a lot at stake here.
One of the tests is going to be in the gubernatorial race.
Right.
The election's the 6th of November. What's your guess as to when they and everybody else, the two major candidates, Mr. Jealous, Mr. Hogan, will have a chance to read these recommendations and weigh in? And voters, should this election be a referendum on the Kerwin recommendations?
Well, that's...
Which is another way of saying how important
right,
is this really?
Exactly. I think from everything I've heard from both candidates, they are generally supportive of the of what the commission is doing, its preliminary report. And so I think by the time, when election comes around, my guess is they're both going to be saying that they support the commission. I think the test is when January comes and the legislature reconvenes and a bill actually gets put down, where, now the rubber meets the road. There's very specific language, very specific dollar signs, and that's got to be a bill that is passed and the governor signs. So that's when the real test would occur.
Let me press you on this, sir,
sure.
If you wouldn't mind. Are we talking a report September 15th, October 1st, October 15th?
Sometime in the September, October, early October timeframe.
Let's see if we can get one more phone call. Eric in Anne Arundel County, welcome to Midday with Dr. Britt Kerwin.
Hello, how are you guys doing?
Fine, thanks.
Well,
what's on your mind, sir?
Well, I'm an educator in Anne Arundel County, and you mentioned that the gubernatorial race is coming up, but also our race for county executive. Our current incumbent is using advertisements to propagate maybe not entirely factual statistics about the school system, saying that he's approved pay increases for teachers the past 4 years, when it's actually been, we've been on a pay freeze for the past, I believe, 8 years, and it's been simply a cost of living increase, but also the fact that school construction projects are, quote, in the works, but they've been stalled and pushed back for several years now, and I'm a little tired of being caught in the political firestorm as an educator.
Right. And that's a good point. How does it break down in terms of fiscal, financial responsibility between the state and the
right.
local jurisdictions?
Yeah, well, basically, the state pays roughly half of the cost of education, and the local jurisdictions.
That's what's happening now.
That's what's happening.
Is that a good idea moving forward?
Absolutely. I think there is one issue that there are, I don't want to get down in the weeds, but in the core funding, it's 50-50, roughly. Some jurisdictions, because of the wealth, pay a little less, and some pay more. But then there are special weights for things like special education, for high concentrations of poverty, et cetera, et cetera. There, the state pays its portion of the money, but it's optional for the local school district. That's something that we are looking at very seriously, about whether it shouldn't be a mandate that the locals have to match the funding. There are two areas where I think it's important, just to make, if I could, a quick comment. One is this priority for a much greater investment in schools serving high concentrations of poverty. This is a huge issue with the commission. One of the troubling things we found...
So the formula has to be weighted in some degree on that.
Absolutely. So one of the troubling things we found out about Maryland is we underinvest in schools serving high concentrations of poverty. In fact, there's several reports out there saying that when you look at what affluent schools have and what schools serving low-income communities have, we are one of the most regressive states in the union. And everybody was shocked at that. That's not what you think of about Maryland. So a major push in this report is going to be a significant investment in schools serving high concentration of poverty. Now, what does that mean? That means expanding what were so-called community schools, bringing social services into the schools to help the kids and the families that are in very challenging circumstances, adding academic programming in the late afternoon, having summer enrichment programming. So this is an absolutely mandatory thing, and that's the other thing we need to talk about at some point is what about teachers, because that's critical.
That's on the list, to be sure. Yeah, by one reckoning, Maryland spends about 5% less money on students in poor districts than in the wealthy ones.
Right.
It's like, what's the deal with that?
We cannot let that continue.
We will continue that conversation when we come back from a quick break. By the way, this programming note, we will have more on education next week here on Midday. On Wednesday, I'm going to speak with three teachers in the Baltimore City school system as they prepare for another school year. Karen Ginyard teaches elementary school. Tavon McGee is a middle school teacher. And Bobby Marinelli is a high school teacher. We'll get their perspectives on the challenges facing our city schools born out of their actual experiences in the classroom. That's coming up next Wednesday. On Midday, we'll have more today with Britt Kerwin, the chair of the Kerwin Commission, when we return from a quick break. 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org, our Twitter handle @MiddayWYPR. You can catch us on the WYPR Facebook page as well, where we are streaming. I'm Tom Hall. Stick around. Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. If you've just joined us, my guest is Britt Kerwin. He's the Chancellor Emeritus of the University System of Maryland and a longtime member of the faculty of the University of Maryland College Park, where he also served as president. And he's the chair of Maryland's Commission on Innovation and Excellence in Education, created in 2016 by the governor and the General Assembly to improve the state's public education system, as well as recommend a new funding formula for our public schools. Our number here, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. And we are streaming on the WYPR Facebook page. I will try to get to as many calls and tweets and Facebook pings as we can. Dr. Kerwin, pertaining to the remark you made just before we went to the break, the ACLU of Maryland sent us a tweet asking, will the Kerwin Commission implement the race equity recommendations that Dr. Tolson, I don't know who that is, excuse me, presented to them on what black students need to succeed in schools?
Absolutely. Equity is just an overwhelming consideration by the commission. Equity based on race, income, geography. That's really driving the work of the group. We want to enclose all the achievement gaps based on equity. And Dr. Tolson made a phenomenal presentation to us, and I'm grateful to those who recommended that he come and speak to the commission.
David in Baltimore, welcome to Midday with Britt Kerwin.
Hey, thanks for the conversation today. I wanted to just ask how the commission is really valuing and making a priority, making students, focusing more on how students think over test scores, and also diversifying success to include possibly the trades or other vocations for students that have more of an aptitude of working with their hands.
Yeah, good point, David.
Absolutely. Well, this latter point is I think one of the major recommendations coming out of the commission. We want to rethink the K-12 curriculum, to benchmark it against international standards and move college and career ready assessments back from the 11th grade to the 10th grade, so that we will have we can really rethink high school. If kids are college and career ready in the 10th grade, we want them to have pathways, AP courses, international baccalaureate, or early college. And a third pathway will be this career and technical education. So we're talking about a big investment in CTE, and with the goal that we will make it possible for kids to earn an industry-recognized credential when they graduate from high school, so they can move right into a high-skill trade or profession and earn a very nice income while they go to college, or as just as a sole source of activity.
Let me ask you about teachers.
Teachers.
Recruiting good teachers.
Absolutely.
Keeping good teachers, paying them what they're worth, and also principals.
Because, yes.
You know, I had
a very
knowledgeable guy about education. He's been in the education racket for years,
right.
And I'm John McGill, who says there's not one bad school that has a good leader.
Well,
there's not one good school that has a bad leader.
Well, that's so well put. I've heard the similar statement that show me a good principal and I'll show you a good school. But this is one of our major policy buckets. And first, let me just point out, there isn't a high performing system anywhere in the world that doesn't treat teaching as a high status profession. That's what we've got to do in Maryland. We have some outstanding teachers. There are dedicated souls out there that are doing phenomenal work. We just don't have enough of them. Teaching is too often a revolving door. People go into teaching, 5 years later they're out of teaching. They don't get the working conditions in the schools. The compensation doesn't keep up with other professions who have a similar level of education. So making teaching a high status profession is a major recommendation. What does that mean? We want to elevate the certification standard. This is what Massachusetts did. We want to put the onus on our teacher preparations programs to better prepare teachers for the classrooms they will be teaching in, the various socioeconomic differences they will find, for the rigor that we are expecting to be a certified teacher. We want to create a career ladder so that teachers can stay in teaching and earn a good income. Right now, if you're a really good teacher and you've got family obligations and you need to make more money, you've got basically two options: go into administration or leave teaching. So we want a career ladder so that teachers can stay in teaching and earn an appropriate salary. So once all this gets phased in, what we are saying is we need to benchmark teachers' salaries at the level of other professions with a similar level of education requirement. If we can do that, I'm telling you, we're going to have a great education
and
system.
And a year or two ago, when the city schools found themselves $130 million short, a few people said, well, one of the causes of that is that one of the predecessors to the current CEO of the city school, Sonia Sonalisa, Andres Alonso,
right,
changed teacher contracts for merit increases, for recognizing just
right.
the kind of thing you're talking about.
Right.
Let's pay our city school teachers more.
Right.
Right. There are any number of teachers in the system making six-figure incomes. Everybody clapped their hands and said, that's a great idea.
Right.
And then a couple of years later, the school's at $130 million in the hole. So there are some people who estimate your own commission. Estimated in the preliminary report, nearly $3 billion is about the number that we think we are underfunded now.
Right.
Right. So what kind of, can you give us a ballpark of what you think this thing is going to cost ultimately? I mean, it's just a lot of money.
Let me first of all correct the $3 billion. One of our charges, as I said at the outset, was we were supposed to assess the funding level for the Thornton Commission. And was the funding adequate? There was a consultant who gave a report to the commission saying to update the Thornton Commission to what the cost of today would require $3 billion. The commission didn't come up with that $3 billion
okay.
figure. That was what a consultant said. You know, and it would be irresponsible for me to throw a number out there. I mean, that's exactly what we're doing. We got work groups working, you know, constantly, grinding away at the specifics of the recommendations, aligning them with their cost, and we will produce a number, but I just would be reluctant to do it right now.
Let's go to the phones. Ronald in Glen Burnie, welcome to Midday with Dr. Kerwin.
Good afternoon. Nice to talk to you.
Thank you.
My comment is this. The commission is working on a macro level of the system, you know, the accountability, the funding, the distribution of the resources, and so forth. Now, that's fine. I'm sure you'll do a good job. My own comment is that you must also focus on the micro level, that is, the student themselves. You must motivate them to want to educate themselves. I've been working with international projects in Latin America pretty much all my life. I'm getting pretty old now, and I've seen underperforming schools. I've seen decrepit schools in Guyana and Peru. And it, to me, is vital that because this culture has a very strange attitude toward education. We use terms like egghead, and we don't revere education. You've got to make students revere education and want to become educated themselves. If you do that, you'd be surprised at the outcomes that you're going to have.
Thanks, Ronald. I appreciate that. What's the capacity of the state government, the federal government, the, even local jurisdictions to do that? Is this simply a parental job, or is this the job of people who are in the education business?
It's obviously part parental, but this is why great teachers are so important. That's what inspires kids to want to learn. I became a mathematician because of Mrs. Fugate in my 10th grade geometry class. I mean, she inspired me. And that's what we need to have in front of every kid in the state. Great teachers.
Steve in Cockeysville, time for a quick comment from you. Thanks for calling.
Oh, hi there.
Hi.
In brief, I think that the solution to most of Baltimore's problems is education. Maybe re-engineer it, but I've always felt that you couldn't spend too much on education and that what you don't spend on education, you may very well spend on prisons down the road.
Yeah, that's a good point,
Steve. Your choice.
Yeah, it's a good point.
You know, I'm so glad the caller made that point because, you know, for too long, people have thought about if my local school is good, that's everything's okay. I don't have to worry about some school in a different part of the state. But that's not the world we live in now. If we want Maryland to have a strong economy, we got to have good schools across the state. And when we don't, you just think about the cost, social costs that we pay when young people aren't adequately educated and have to go out on the street and we suffer the consequences.
Once the commission makes its recommendations,
yes,
then is it also going to be part of your purview and part of your effort to convince the legislature that these expenditures are worth it? I mean, we've got callers who call this program all the time who say, I'm willing to pay higher property taxes. Yeah. I'm willing to pay higher sales taxes, income taxes. Do you assume that there will be some sort of taxation implication for the recommendations?
There will have to be a source of revenue. There's no question about it. But let me just say, I mentioned to you during the break, this is the I've been in education for 54 years. This is the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. But I also think it's the most important because if we can get this right, what a difference we will make for our state and its future generations.
Good luck and Godspeed, sir. I appreciate your time today. Dr. William E. Britt Kerwin is the chair of Maryland's Commission on Innovation and Excellence in Education, better known as the Kerwin Commission. We've got a link to the commission's preliminary report issued last January on our website, wypr.org/midday. One of the Kerwin Commission's working groups is meeting in Annapolis as we speak. That meeting is focused on resources for at-risk students. It continues until 5 o'clock this evening if you want to stop by. And as a reminder that next Wednesday here on Midday, we'll convene a panel of teachers from the Baltimore City Public School System to get their take on what's going on in their classrooms and what they're looking forward to accomplishing in a few weeks when the new school year begins. Coming up tomorrow, Nathan Sterner will sit in for me for this week's edition of the Midday News Wrap. He'll talk with a pastor from Chicago. That's a town with some disturbing parallels to Baltimore, particularly regarding the relationship between the police and communities of color. Nathan will also talk with Melody Simmons of the Baltimore Business Journal about a new series that the BBJ is doing called Stop Apologizing Baltimore. I hope you'll join Nathan for those conversations and more tomorrow right here on Midday. We want to thank Eddie's of Roland Park for providing lunch today. Eddie's is a full-service market with locations on North Charles Street and on Roland Avenue in Roland Park. Their deli features a variety of sandwiches and salads, all listed on their website, eddiesofrolandpark.com. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.